John Adams frequently reminded his wife Abigail that a strong man is only as strong as the woman by his side. When he traveled to France in 1783 to sign the Treaty of Paris, Abigail found strength through the bonds of sisterhood. Dear Abigail, the intimate lives and revolutionary ideas of Abigail Adams and her two remarkable sisters is Diane Jacobs' new book. It chronicles the correspondence between Abigail and her sisters, Mary Cranch and Elizabeth Shaw Peabody, published by Ballantine Books. I'm very pleased that it brings Diane Jacobs to our show today. Hello.
Hello, Leonard. Nice to be here.
You described the three sisters as ardent rebels. Were they all prominent during the revolutionary period?
They were. They all felt very strongly that there had to be a break with Great Britain. And quite a bit before most people realized that that was going to be the case.
But we remember Abigail because she was married to the second president of the United States.
Yes.
One of the founding fathers. They were not married to as prominent men?
No. And my argument is that if they had been married to as prominent men, they would have been as prominent because they were equally intellectual. They were equally involved in politics, particularly the older sister, Mary Cranch. The younger sister was more literary. But they married... Well, Mary married this extremely intelligent man who introduced John to Abigail, and everybody revered him, but he was just a failed businessman, and Mary basically had to take over and bring in boarders, which was not unusual if you were a widow or if you were single, but which was unusual if you were a married woman. And Elizabeth married a poor minister, and her father had also been a minister, but he wasn't poor because her mother's family, the Quincy family, was a very wealthy family. And the family she married into, the Shaw family, was not wealthy.
She was the most reluctant of the three to get married.
Well, she wasn't.
Was there a lot of pressure at that time?
Well, she was an extremely romantic person, and she always intended to get married, but she had this correspondence with her cousin, which I just thought was marvelous, and which can be found in the Library of Congress. When they were both teenagers, only he was in Harvard and she was back at home taking care of her parents. And he said to her, "Oh, I know you're going to love reading Madame de Sévigné." She was a great reader, because she feels just like you that nobody needs marriage. And in fact, at that point, Elizabeth was really very interested in her cousin and sort of hoped he'd propose. And she replied, "Oh, no, there's nobody I disagree with more than Madame de Sévigné." So she wanted to get married. She had trouble because her mother died and her father was alone. And the only single daughter was expected to take care of the parent.
On the other hand, I assume that they came out of a remarkable family, because when women achieve on the level that they did, or at least say the kinds of things that they did, it's usually because they were encouraged by their parents.
Well, oddly enough, they were not encouraged by their parents. Their father had this huge library, but the one he was interested in was the only son, Billy, who was the ne'er-do-well, who chose not to go to Harvard when the girls were just so eager to go to Harvard. It wasn't as if he discouraged their reading, but he said, "You know, I'm not going to do anything." Their mother taught them the basic reading and math, and they just went into that library. Somehow they had the genes, but they were not stimulated until actually Mary's husband, Richard Cranch, came into the house. He came in to return a book, and he stayed to tutor the children.
John Adams said the letters between Abigail and her sisters were written with their elegant pen. So he paid a similar compliment to Thomas Jefferson. So he must have thought that they wrote rather well, that they were quite literary.
He did. He frequently said that Abigail wrote better than he did, and they wrote differently. I don't know. I like both of their correspondence.
Did he read the sisters' letters? Did Abigail show
them? Well, there was one funny story where he was not supposed to read Mary Cranch's letters to Abigail when he was the president of the United States, and or in any other position. He was never supposed to read her letters because she wrote intimately to Abigail.
And rather gossipy.
And, well, gossipy and everything. And she did not, Abigail did not want John reading the letters. So one day, Abigail came in, I think they were in Philadelphia, and saw that John had opened a letter from Mary, and she chastised him. She said, "You never can do this again." And she wrote Mary, "Well, I've gotten a vow from him. I'll never read one of your letters again."
When did the letters start? What kinds of things were they writing to each other?
Well, they wrote a lot about politics. There was sort of a form to their letters. They would start talking about the things that were least intimate. For instance, if someone had a sick child or even a child they were afraid was dying, that would be at the end of a letter. They would start by saying, well, so-and-so got married and whatever, just the day-to-day occurrences. Then they would go into, isn't this terrible that this political thing is happening, and don't you hope that this happens? And then at the very end, they would put in the intimate thing. So I have a feeling that what the sisters did was open the letters and go immediately to the end.
Were they opinionated about each other's lives the way some sisters can be?
Well, Mary and Abigail were so supportive that, you know, I couldn't even get any drama out of, except that so many dramatic things were happening that they were involved in.
But they weren't competitive.
But they were not competitive. In fact, Abigail wrote Mary a letter at one point saying, if you or anybody else thinks I'm acting sort of uppity because of my position in the world, please let me know. And she meant it. And she always thought of Mary as the older sister. So Mary was really above her in the hierarchy, which was very important to Puritans.
And so she saw herself as being a typical middle child?
Well,
we don't see her that way in history.
No, she wasn't that modest. She realized that she had a place in history and the other two didn't. But in her attitude toward Mary was always the older sister. And Elizabeth was always the younger sister. And she did boss Elizabeth around. And Elizabeth was a little bit resentful. And so there were some dramatic scenes between them.
My guest is Diane Jacobs, whose latest book is Dear Abigail, The Intimate Lives and Revolutionary Ideas of Abigail Adams and Her Two Remarkable Sisters. You have also written a book on Mary Wollstonecraft, and she was an 18th century feminist writer, but also about Preston Sturges, Woody Allen.
Yes, well, I go along with the saying of foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds. So I like to...
There's no thread in these books?
Well, you could say the thread was Paris. They all went to Paris. And I love Paris.
Abigail did read writers like Catherine Macaulay and Mary Wollstonecraft.
Oh, yes. Between the two of them, there's a real connection. It's just tangential when I bring in Preston Sturges. But yes, there was a lot of connection.
Although Preston Sturges wrote great female characters. Lady Eve?
Yes, he did. And that's my favorite of his films. And yes, I mean, he did write great female characters, and I guess that's part of why I was so attracted to him.
Did Catherine Macaulay and Mary Wollstonecraft inspire Abigail to write Remember the Ladies?
Well, she had read Catherine Macaulay before. Mary Wollstonecraft didn't write that until later. Mm. But I think she was someone who looked around and saw the way things were. For instance, she was very sympathetic toward the blacks. And she said, how can I think that Southerners have the same view of freedom that we in New England have, because they keep these black people as slaves. They don't give them their liberty. And I think that she looked around and she thought, this is ridiculous. We have opinions. We're intelligent. We're educated. So, you know, why should we be seen as second-class citizens?
John Adams didn't push the matter of slavery when he became president, or even as a founding father. So did he take her? Did they share that opinion?
They shared that opinion, but the one who really shared the opinion with her was her son, John Quincy. Mm. And so
he made one of the most famous legal decisions as a judge.
Yes, and I think he was very influenced by Abigail because her letters are so filled with these statements.
In 1796, Adams became president. He won by a very narrow margin, 71 electoral votes against Thomas Jefferson, who today we would call a Democrat, but then those days he was the Republican candidate.
Right.
Do you think that if Adams was alive today, would he be a member of either of the current parties, even if he was a defender of the Boston Tea Party?
Now, that's a very interesting question. He would certainly be.
And a bad joke, too.
Yeah. Right. Well, I don't know. I do not see him in the Tea Party, that's for sure. No Tea Party.
What had been the big issues of the campaign?
Well,
with Jefferson.
Well, France was the biggest issue. It was sympathy with France. And Thomas Jefferson just thought the French Revolution was wonderful and that basically the Americans should join with the French the way the French joined with the Americans. And John Adams didn't see that at all. He thought we should, and Washington had felt the same as John Adams did, that America should not align itself with any foreign power.
Now, he had gone to Paris and left Abigail behind, even though Abigail wanted to go. But that was before the Revolution.
Right. And then after the Revolution, he really wanted her to come, and she didn't want to come at first. She was very comfortable being at home with her sisters and her family, and she didn't want to go to Paris. And then ultimately he had to talk her into it.
Well, did Mary and Elizabeth express any jealousy when Abigail became First Lady?
They expressed sadness that she was going away again. And they expressed that every single time she went away. They'd say, well, it's great for the country. It was seen as a sacrifice on the part of both John and Abigail by the sisters.
Mary became a de facto mayor of a small village that she lived in. Couldn't have become the mayor itself because she was a woman.
Right. So her husband was elected to all these prominent offices in the town, and everybody who elected him knew that really the one who was going to be doing the business would be Mary. And that was the case, particularly when they were finding a new minister.
In order to find a suitable husband, women read a book called Philosophy of Coquetry. Did the sisters read it?
Oh, I'm sure they did.
Is it coquetry?
Yes. I think. I'm sure they did. I know their children read the book. It's actually a contrary book. On the one hand, it says, well, you have to get a man. But on the other hand, it says you get it through virtue and you don't do anything unsavory before you're married.
But could you flirt? After all, the title suggests that you become a coquette.
Well, the title suggests it, but the book itself is a little sterner. Mm-hmm. And it's approved by the Puritans.
There were definite opinions about national styles of women. French women were thought of as masculine, oversexed. English women were expected to be docile. Was Abigail a typical American woman?
No, she wasn't a typical American woman. I think most American women at that time were a lot more docile. I think that the Americans were much more like the British. In fact, the British had the blue stockings, and blue stockings were never thought of very well by the men, at least, in America. She changed her mind on the French. She went to France and just thought these are brazen women, poorly dressed. And by the time she left, she thought, oh, they're very stylish, they're low-keyed, and they're so much more savant than the British. And also, they had their salons, which she envied.
Well, she must have seen kindred spirits there.
She did. She did. She saw these outspoken women, and she wasn't allowed to be one. She was absolutely startled when she was at a dinner party, and the woman took over the whole conversation.
When the smallpox vaccine was offered, Abigail and her sisters opted for an alternative method. Why?
Well, the alternative method, they were both inoculations, and you couldn't have a vaccine at that point. So, and by having an inoculation, you had to come down with the disease, and then you would be immune for life afterwards. And they'd been afraid of doing that because many people died when they had the full vaccine. So they heard of a new way of being inoculated, and that was of just having a little teeny bit of the inoculation put in, so a little teeny bit of the germ.
Aware, obviously, of the latest advances in medicine, among other things. In a letter to Elizabeth, Abigail wrote, "If a man is lord, woman is lordess."
Yes. Yes.
Sounds like early feminist.
Well, but not quite like Mary Wollstonecraft, because Mary Wollstonecraft would have said they're equal. They're, you know, we don't need to have lord and lordess. We're, you know, just two lords or whatever. And Abigail was giving respect to the fact that, yes, in the one realm, the public realm, the husband was the lord.
But she saw herself as a lordess.
She was the lordess of the house.
Did she had a secret admirer, James Lovell?
Yes. Not so secret.
Uh-huh. Did that bother John?
Well, I think John didn't know anything about it, and then he felt so guilty because he never wrote when he was away. He was the most horrible correspondent. And he would, in fact, when he did write Abigail, he would just write, I can't write you.
Meanwhile, she had her sisters to write to. Dear Abigail, the intimate lives and revolutionary ideas of Abigail Adams and her two remarkable sisters, published by Ballantine Books. My great thanks to Diane Jacobs for coming by to talk about it.
Thank you, Leonard.